You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation, and welcome to your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you for subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. So on Sunday night, the Heat hosted the Houston Rockets, a team that many experts predicted might contend for a title this year, but they weren't prepared for Miami at all, who blew out the Rockets 129-100. I had intended to record a recap last night, but technical difficulties kept me from doing so I apologize for that. But on today's show, I'll give a short recap with my observations in the first segment, then answer some of your Twitter questions in a second before previewing Tuesday's matchup with the Denver Nuggets, the first of a three-game road trip for Miami. But first, the Rockets came. Houston never led at any point, and Miami's biggest lead was 41. Miami's defense was fantastic, but their offense was even better. They shot nearly 53% from the floor and connected on 44% of their three-point attempts. This was the version of the Heat that we were hoping we would see against contending teams. They were able to do so against Milwaukee. They had a good game here and there, but for the most part, we hadn't seen it really tie together as perfectly as we did against the Houston Rockets. Now, a lot of people were supposing that maybe Houston was a little deflated because of the South Beach flu, the quote-unquote South Beach flu, where they may have been out late night on Saturday with nothing else to do in South Beach, and perhaps they weren't ready physically for the Heat. They weren't ready to play at all, and so they looked out of sorts. That might be true. We don't know that for certain. My feeling is always that that's always been kind of overstated, because I think NBA players, in reality, they can find a party wherever they go. I understand the party in South Beach is not the same as the party in Cleveland or Milwaukee in a February road trip, but at the same time, James Harden and Russell Westbrook are as competitive as can be, and they're probably going to go and put their best effort forward against any opponent, regardless of the situation there. So my feeling is that the South Beach flu wasn't as much of a factor as we'd like to think it was. The reality is that Houston is a very bad defensive team, and their offense is great. They get to the line a lot. Obviously, James Harden gets to the line quite a bit. But at the same time, they give up a lot of points. They've looked inconsistent for most of the season. I still think that they are a very, very good team that can contend for a title if they're playing at their very best. But on Sunday night, they clearly weren't. And I think a big part of that was Jimmy Butler, who was absolutely fantastic. Again, not the leading scorer for this team. A concern from some people that Butler isn't the points getter that we expected him to be. I thought he'd be the leading scorer for this team. Clearly, that hasn't been the case. He's still working his way into it. But moreover, he's just been really, really good on everything else, which is a strength. He's picking his spots. He's making plays for others. On Sunday night, he had 18 points, 7 rebounds, 9 assists, 4 steals, and a block while playing defense on both Harden and Westbrook, who combined for just 9 of 25 shooting. So Jimmy was absolutely phenomenal. He anticipates passing lanes better than anybody. He knows how to play incredible man-on-man defense. He makes plays for others. He draws defenses. He's able to collapse a defense and then find a cutter. And that's part of what makes this team so, so good. I'll get into the offense a little bit later, but they're just making plays for each other. They know how to move without the ball. I know I've said it before, but it bears repeating that without Hassan Whiteside there, this offense is so completely different because nobody's sticking around, nobody's rooted to the floor, everybody's moving all the time. You have guys cutting to the hoop if the defense collapses, like in Jimmy's case, or when Kendrick Nunn or Goran Dragic or anybody else drives to the rim. You know, you have Adebayo, who's there to clean up messes using his incredible athleticism. So much can happen with this team because everybody's moving. You have such a great quality of shooters all around. And it's just, well, let me get into that right now. The shooting has been incredible. They're shooting 40% on three-point attempts, second in the NBA. 48% from all field goal attempts, first in the NBA. So clearly, we're seeing some very, very potent offense. They're playing at the highest pace in the league. They're just they're very, very good. I know it's oversimplifying things, but the reality is that this is a team that does a lot of things well on the offensive end. On a night when Jimmy wasn't the leading scorer, when Kendrick Nunn, who had been the leading scorer, struggled for just 5 points, when, you know, a number of guys weren't contributing at a high level, Bam Adebayo didn't break 10 points. You know, he only scored 8 points in the game. So between Adebayo and Nunn, you get 13 points. You get 4 from Chris Silva. You get 6 from Kelly Olynyk. Guys that have contributed big games in the past, none of them really had a big game, and it didn't really matter. You had other guys step up because you have so much depth on this team. And it's just incredible playmaking ability at every position. And so the defense has also been very good in addition to that offense. They're holding opponents to just 42% from the field. That's really, really good. 26.6% on three-point attempts. That's first in the NBA. They're forcing 19.3 turnovers per game, which ranks second in the league right now. So all of these statistical categories that you can, you know, show as far as defense is concerned, they're dominating, they're attacking, so much switchability as far as the rotations are concerned. Everybody's moving around. It's so much easier, even with a center like Myers Leonard out there, or a guy like Olynyk or Silva. Silva, obviously, a lot more mobile than Olynyk, but at the same time, it doesn't really matter. Myers, you know, he's not necessarily a slouch defensively. He's had issues. I know he's been very slow at times. He's a little rooted to the ground as far as defense is concerned, but for the most part, he's giving incredible effort, and it's not even a factor, because if a guy gets past him, which has been the case, there are so many other people who can pick up the slack, who can protect the rim, who can prevent an easy shot, who can strip the ball if he gets around that initial defender. And I think that's what we're seeing a lot. If a person drives to the hoop, they get past that initial defender, somebody comes in there, pokes the ball out, lends a hand, forces a turnover, and then it's off to the races, where they're initiating this fast break offense that has been more potent than we've seen since the Big Three era. And that's not saying much, because it's a very slow plodding offense, a half-court offense that we've seen over the last few years between Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade, Josh Richardson, and others. And so that's completely different than what we're seeing right now. They're attacking all the time, again, that high pace, and they're shooting the ball really, really well. So they've been absolutely phenomenal as far as their scoring and defense is concerned, and defense that leads to offense, which is incredible. Their passing has been absolutely phenomenal. Against Houston, they had 38 assists on 47 field goals. I talked about this in the last recap. They're just passing the ball very well. And again, that playmaking ability at every position is such a difference. You have so many guys that can make sharp passes, cutters to the rim. You had Jimmy with 9 assists. You had Bam Adebayo with 5 assists. Kendrick Nunn, even when he wasn't scoring, had 5 assists. James Johnson, who had his first action for the Heat this regular season, had 3 assists. Goran Dragic with 4 assists, and Tyler Hero with 7 assists. So everybody really, really chipping in there. In fact, Duncan Robinson, Myers Leonard only had 1 assist apiece, and Silva didn't have an assist between them. They were the only ones below 2 assists per game, so it was incredible. So much great passing. But James Johnson, in his 22 minutes in his first action with the Heat this season, really, really sharp. He had 17 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 7 of 12 field goals from the floor, 2 of 5 from 3-point range. He looked smooth, he looked athletic, he looked healthy, something that I don't think he ever was at any point really last season. I think as much as he wanted to get back from that groin repair surgery in the offseason, the previous offseason, he just really was never in great conditioning or shape. And now I think, unlike Deion Waiters, I think he's responded to the Heat's restrictions keeping him off the floor, and I think he just looked really sharp, and he can still be a competent player, which is the best thing about this, because when you have as much depth as this team does, and you can still add one more player, I think that's just, it makes this team much more dangerous, and the depth is a little different than it has been in the past years. And I've said this before, but I think with Jimmy there, a guy who's not necessarily dominating the way we might have expected him to, there's still a clear hierarchy there as far as everybody understanding their role. And again, if it's the fluidity on offense and defense, where you can switch, where you can make plays for others, all that feeds itself. And Johnson is a guy who can contribute at a high level. I've been a James Johnson fan in his tenure here, because I always expected him to be that kind of playmaker, that kind of versatile defender. And we saw that from him in those 22 minutes against Houston. Duncan Robinson, I'll say this, he had 23 points. He was the leading scorer for Miami this year. When we've had Kendrick Nunn be the leading scorer, we've had Tyler Hero being the leading scorer, we had Goran Dragic, all these different players who have been the leading scorer at one point or another for Miami this season. And last night it was Duncan's turn, 23 points, incredible. And Myers Leonard, his best game in a Heat uniform, 21 points. He was 9 of 11 from the floor, 1 of 2 from 3-point range. So that 9 of 11, you know, we've seen him camped out mostly along the perimeter in his tenure here, but he was getting to the rim, he was shooting well, and he was attacking the basket. He had a really nice spin move at one point early in the first quarter, but we saw more from that later on in the game as well. And he looked good offensively, and I think he can still be a very, very big factor for Miami. I know he's not going to be this consistent all the time. I think he's not going to be the go-to scorer at any point in the season, but that doesn't mean he can't contribute there at a high level. And I think he's a capable and smart enough player where he understands when to pick and choose his spots, and he can make a difference down the line. So, and then as far as Nunan Adebayo being held to just 13 points, I think that's an aberration. I wonder if defenses are starting to key in on Kendrick a little bit more, but hopefully he'll bounce back in the next game against Denver, which we'll talk about in the third segment. But coming up next, I'll answer your questions about the game and the season. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Manscaped is the number one option in men's below-the-belt grooming. Get 20% off your order and free shipping when you enter the promo code LOCKEDON at checkout. So make sure to visit manscaped.com today. Face Denver on Tuesday, and I'll preview the game, but first I'll answer some of the questions that you sent in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Steve00Costa writes in, what position is Nunn? Is he a point guard or shooting guard, and can he be a legit point guard? Well, at his size, it's easy to pin him at the point guard. He can make plays for others. Obviously, he had 5 assists. My feeling is that Nunn is probably better suited as a shooting guard. It's a position that he's played most regularly. I still think that he probably fits there most naturally. But I also think this is a team that doesn't really care too much about positions. I think you can get those kind of contributions all over the place. And what's the difference? What is a point guard and a shooting guard as far as today's NBA is concerned? Where does Steph Curry rank there? I mean, he plays the point guard in that he makes a lot of assists, but he's also a great shooter. Is it just because he's a little smaller than Klay Thompson? I mean, I'm not sure that those designations mean as much as they once did. You look at Jimmy Butler, who can play the 2 or the 3, but he also plays the point at times. It's about who has the ball in their hands, who makes plays for others. And again, everybody on this team can make plays for others, and so it doesn't really matter as much. I still think that Kendrick is looking to score more often than he is pass, which doesn't mean that he can't make the right play at times and pass off if he's cut off, or if the lane to the rim is cut off, or if he can't get a good shot off. It's just about understanding when that shot is falling and when you have to get other guys going. I don't think you have the typical floor general as far as what people expect the point guard position to have been, at least historically. You don't have a guy like Chris Paul who is looking to generate 10-plus assists per game. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think you have enough, again, people who can make passes at every position. Tyler Hero, where does he fit in? Goran Dragic is a score-first point guard. I mean, all these different players who are around the same size that you'd think for a point guard or shooting guard, they can do it all. They can score, they can pass, and I think that's the strength of this team. So I don't think you have to worry too much about the designation, Steve, to be honest with you. I still see Nunn as more of a shooting guard just because he's looking to score more often than not, but that doesn't mean he's not a playmaker either. Rico Lopez asks, how long of a leash does Justice have? I know it's early, but if his shots, especially the threes, don't start falling, and with the amount of playmakers the team seems to have, how important is he to the offense? I say again, though, it's early. So Rico brings up a good point. Justice did sit out the game against the Rockets because of back spasms that had kept him out the previous game as well. And obviously it didn't matter, although it would have been nice to see what his defense would have been like against Harden and Westbrook and whether or not he could have fit alongside Jimmy, because that's still an issue there, whether or not he'll understand how his role fits in. He wants to have the ball in his hands. He's more of that kind of point guard that Steve asked in the previous question, because he wants the ball in his hands. He wants to be able to control the offense and the pace and distributing the ball to people. But at the same time, I think he'll take a step back as far as understanding that he's one of many who can make those plays for others. So I don't think there's a short leash when it comes to Justice. I think Eric Spoelstra has immense faith in Justice's ability and his impact in the game. He's always said that Winslow makes winning plays, and that's a big priority for Spoelstra. So I don't think that Justice is on any kind of short leash or whether or not he's going to get yanked out of a game if the shot's not falling. I think more than anything else, if the shot's not falling but they're good shots, Spoelstra won't worry about that. My feeling is that it's if Justice ever gets to a point where he's forcing offense and not looking to get other players going, that's when he'll get pulled out of the game. So I'd say it's a medium leash in that, you know, again, if the shot's not falling and he's not making an impact or he's in foul trouble, then clearly he's a detriment on the floor and it's worth bringing in somebody else because there is so much depth. Because there you have guys like James Johnson who can initiate offense and is back in there. You have Jimmy, you have Tyler, you have Kendrick Nunn, Goran Dragic, and so on and so forth. So many different playmakers. It's just great to see. So I wouldn't worry too much about Justice's impact as far as his, you know, whether or not he's going to be restricted or whether or not people are watching for his mistakes to pull him off the floor. I think they're going to let him play through those for the most part because it is still early in the season, so that's not a concern. Now, I shall bring up also that Dion Waiters, that situation has been updated. He was active on Sunday against the Rockets, but he did not play, and he was not on the bench. He was, according to Anthony Chang of the Miami Herald, shooting around in the practice facility at the American Airlines Arena during the game, and I guess that's just something they want the team to do. I guess the team wants him to do, rather. I think they just want him to stay sharp. I don't know that there's a resolution here. I thought that making him an active player was some kind of a resolution, and that maybe at least the first step towards bring him back and welcome him into the fold, but clearly that's not the case. My feeling is that they're still looking to move him. I've seen some rumors about a potential trade. I'm not sure that we can give those any kind of credence just yet, although obviously discussions have been held with a number of teams around the league, and I imagine they'll continue to shop him around, so we'll see how that plays out. Our next question comes from Woodley, who asks, is this the deepest team in the NBA? And are you worried about Miami having 13 players deserving of minutes, even though it's a good team? What's your ideal rotation, and who would be left out, in your opinion? Wow, that's a lot to unpack there. As far as whether or not this team is the deepest in the NBA, you know, I kind of start to think that it is, but it's also six games in the season. I think it's, this is different. I think when I had talked about depth before, one of the points that I brought up as far as how people look at depth is that you have this clear hierarchy as far as talent is concerned. You have superstar players, and then you have a number of people who can play roles. In this team, on this roster, you have a clear superstar in Jimmy. You have mid-tier level players in Bam, Justice, and others. But then everybody else steps up. The fact that Kendrick Nunn has emerged as a scorer he is, that Goran's embraced his role off the bench, their roles just happen to be bigger than we would have expected. It's not about Jimmy scoring. He doesn't have to be the team's best scorer. He doesn't have to be their leading scorer. He just makes other players better. He makes everybody around him step up their game defensively, and he makes plays for others to get their offenses going. And that's a great sign of what a superstar can be. So is it the deepest team in the NBA? There are others that might have some consideration. I think Miami's upcoming opponent in Denver is a pretty deep team. I'd say Milwaukee's probably a pretty deep team. You could give some, let's see, I'm off the top of my head, I'm not sure that there are many other options, though, to be honest with you. Miami is looking very, very good. And it's just because everybody's stepping up. They're playing such a great role right now. So as long as everybody's still able to contribute, I think that's a good thing. And so to the second part of your question, you know, am I worried that Miami has 13 players deserving of minutes? No, I'm not. I think that on a night-to-night basis, you can decide, you know, who gets a little extra playing time here. I think, you know, Kelly Olynyk, who struggles with consistency sometimes, only played 14 minutes against Houston. Kendrick Nunn, who had been, you know, playing close to 30 minutes per game, only played 19. And so Spoelstra is a little bit more flexible in his rotations than what we've seen in the past. He actually did wind up playing 10 players, and that's because Justice Winslow was out. So I'm not sure that we actually have 13 players there, although you can give Dion Waiters some playing time if he's available. That doesn't seem like it's going to happen, so I wouldn't worry about it too much. So in reality, you've got 11 players, the 10 that played last night. You've got Justice Winslow, and then you've also got Udonis and Dion Waiters on the team. So other than that, I'm not too concerned about it, and I think it's a strength. I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be. You look at Denver, and they do something similar, where they go to a number of players, and I think based on the way this offense plays too, at the pace that they're playing, it's not as hard to get into a rhythm. Maybe you do need a little bit more playing time to kind of loosen up and get that offense going. Maybe for in the case of Kelly Olynyk, if he had played closer to 30 minutes, maybe that shot would have fallen eventually and he just didn't get an opportunity, or he didn't really fall into an easy rhythm early on. And so maybe that would have happened eventually. It just didn't work out in his case. But I still think that you can make that a strength. And I imagine that Spoelstra, as he has in the past, will tighten that rotation once the postseason approaches. But for now, it's good to have all these players contributing at a high level. Who gets left out? You know, Duncan Robinson started, but he's also had games where he hasn't played at all. Chris Silva is providing a spark plug off the bench, but I don't know that he plays if it's not a blow against a blowout against Houston. James returning to the lineup was a surprise, but the fact that he played 22 minutes was pretty shocking, all things considered. But I think it indicates that he was effective in those 22 minutes. He was aggressive, looking to score, but he's also making plays for others. And I think you can balance it out, and I think Spoelstra will figure out how to. I mean, Jimmy Butler played 27 minutes. Duncan Robinson played 36 because his shot was falling. Goran Dragic played 28. Tyler Hero played 35. So the rotation's kind of all over the place. And the minutes, I just don't know that you're going to get to it. So I haven't talked to the team about this and whether or not they're experiencing any kind of discomfort. For now, it looks like they're all thriving. They're all playing well. There's a great chemistry on the team. So I don't think that there's any hard feelings about whether or not they're getting into a rotation or not. And I don't know that anybody necessarily gets out. I would imagine the most likely candidates are Duncan and Chris Silva, just because if Kelly's playing better, he's still a little bit more versatile offensively. He doesn't give the same effort as Chris Silva. You know, he's not as mobile and athletic, but I think he's still a better playmaker. And so he'll probably get more playing time in the long run. But maybe there's a trade down the line that shakes things up a little bit and that tightens it from 11 active players to maybe 9 or 10. Either way, I still think it's a good thing. So I wouldn't worry about it too much, Woodley. Wyler Talls asks, my question is, and am I the only person not freaking out about the early season turnover problems? Butler, Hero, Nunn, Leonard, and Robinson, brand new to the team. Bam and Derrick Jones Jr. playing more minutes than usual. Sorry, I forgot Derrick Jones Jr. when I was talking about the rotations. He does bring it up to 12 players, 13 if you include Deion. So maybe Woodley was right. Only person that worries me is Dragic, asked Wyler. So the turnover problems were a little tighter against Houston. They wound up having 15 turnovers and forced 22 for Houston. And I still think it's as a byproduct of just the act of playmaking, the fact that everybody's passing and making the right play and looking to get everybody else going. You take chances, and a lot of those times they've paid off. Maybe down the road, as teams get in a little bit better shape and understand the kind of attacking offense that Miami has been showing over the first few games, maybe they'll try to cut those off a little bit. But it's not easy, because somebody can still force their way to the basket. You know, if you're a Jimmy Butler and you don't double, if Jimmy drives to the hoop, Jimmy's going to get a shot off. So either way, he's not going to force a pass. He's not going to lead to a turnover, because he's going to be able to get to the basket. And I think that's the case with everybody. I wouldn't worry about it too much. As in case of Goran, you know, he has been turning over the ball a little bit. I think he's not quite used to the timing a little bit, because I think he's a little slower, whereas everybody else on this roster is probably a little bit faster now. And so his timing has been a little off. He hasn't been finding cutters as well. He's still been making some sharp passes overall. Against Houston, he had 4 assists and only 2 turnovers. So not great, maybe, but not as glaring as you might think either. So I still have confidence in Goran's ability to be a positively impactful player off the bench. And so not as much of an issue as Wyler might think. But up next, can the Heat win their 4th straight by knocking off the Nuggets in the Mile High City? You're listening to Locked On Heat. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're in iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. And I'll say that a lot of you have been leaving some very, very nice reviews. I am very, very grateful for those. Please keep those up. Let me know what's working, what's not. And of course, always contact me via Twitter or email and let me know if you have any suggestions about the show. But on to the trip against the Nuggets. Again, it's a 3-game road trip. They kick it off in Denver, where they face the Nuggets, who last played on Saturday in Orlando. I was at that game, and I saw the Nuggets up close, who, like Houston, are expected to make a deep run in the playoffs. I don't think people expect them to be a title contender, necessarily. They're up there, but I still think there's a team. This is a team with a lot of doubts. They are at 4-2 after their win in Orlando, and they're doing well, but that record doesn't exactly show that it's been a struggle as well for them. They barely beat the Phoenix Suns, who are a lot better than a lot of people think and will face Miami at some point in the road trip. They beat the Blazers by 8, and then they beat the struggling Kings by 7, and then they lost 2 straight to the Mavs and the Pelicans, who had been winless before knocking off the Nuggets. So following that game, there was a minor issue in the locker room where head coach Michael Malone openly challenged his roster and their effort, and Jamal Murray, their starting guard, had some words of his own for his coach. I asked around if the team was worried about the expectations for the season, whether or not they were feeling a lot of pressure or being a title contender. They dismissed all that. They weren't too concerned about it. And so I think there's a mostly everything is fine there. I think they still see that it's early in the season, so they're not as worried about it. And I think the altercation in the locker room was a little overblown. Not that it didn't happen. Most of the players liked the fact that Jamal spoke up and had no problem doing so, because that shows at least a little leadership, something that's been a little missing from this team. There isn't a clearly designated leader on this team, which is part of the problem. You have Nikola Jokic, who's probably their best player, and he's not exactly a locker room inspiration kind of guy. You have Paul Millsap, who is great, older, however, and also not a very locker room type guy. He doesn't speak very much. I've talked to him. He's not the most forthcoming, and he knows it, and he doesn't care. This is the way he is, and he's convinced that he's capable of speaking when necessary. He doesn't always feel the need to do so, and so that's, you know, a little bit different than Jimmy Butler's style of leadership or Dwayne Wade's or anybody else's. And so it's kind of a leadership by committee. You also have Will Barton, who is, you know, he's been known to have his opinion shared around the locker room. Jamal can do it at times, but he's a little inconsistent as far as his on-court effort is concerned. So, you know, it's an interesting team. The dynamics are not the way that you would expect for most NBA teams, certainly not most successful world, you know, title contending teams either. So they've made a deep run in the playoffs last year, and I think a lot of people expected them, with the addition of Jerami Grant, to take it to another level. That hasn't quite worked out. Sorry, Jerami Grant, not Jerami Grant. But either way, you know, they're going through some things right now. And I think Malone's issue is that they're not giving the same kind of effort on defense in general than they had the previous season. And defense is something that Malone has preached ever since he took over as head coach there. And he expected them to be able to continue their strong defense from last season. That hasn't been the case. But you also look at Nikola Jokic, who is overweight, and he's in a funk. Their offense is a little inconsistent because of Jokic and the fact that he's making some careless passes there. He's an interesting player. For Heat fans and our listeners that have not watched the Nuggets play a lot, and it's hard to because they're obviously a West Coast team and they have started later start times, they're capable of playing a high-paced offense. Jokic is phenomenal with his passing. He's also a great playmaker. He's kind of just... he takes these weird shots at times just because his body, his movements look a little awkward, but they're fluid at the same time. It's hard to describe, other than if you've seen him, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Against the Magic, he turned around late in the shot clock in the fourth quarter in a very, very tight game, and he just took this janky one-legged jumper falling away over Nikola Vucevic. And, you know, he drained it, and that was the difference maker. That was the one that sealed it for them. So the fact that he's in a little bit in a funk, I think it's just, I'm not sure what's going on there. I think it's just a problem with Jamal's style of play. Jamal is aggressive. He takes a lot of shots. They're not good. And Nikola wants to play Euro-style basketball, where they're making pass after pass after pass, moving the ball around. And that's not necessarily the same style that guys like Murray and Gary Harris want to play. So look for their depth, because that's a concern. Some really good positional matchups there. Jokic and Plumlee are not identical, but a lot like Myers Leonard and Olynyk, in the sense that both of them have playmaking ability. Plumlee's a very sharp passer. He's a little bit more physical when it comes to setting screens and blocking out, and he'll probably throw an elbow here or there throughout the course of the game against Miami. So watch out for that, but he can be an effective player. He's a good rim runner and things of that sort. Jokic plays a little bit more smoothly. He doesn't mind the physicality. He's just not looking to initiate it either, and he's not very aggressive. Malone told me before the game that he was looking for Nikola Jokic to take a lot more shots, and then he was just very passive in that first half before finally get it going against the third in the third quarter. But that's just not his style of play. He's not looking to score. He can put up 20 points, but he'd rather probably have 12, 15 points, 9, 10 assists, and 10 rebounds. That's the way he plays, and he feels very comfortable doing so. He likes getting other players engaged, so that's a key matchup there. Jamal Murray, like I said, and Gary Harris, along with Will Barton, that's the bulk of their scoring. They're going to put up three-pointers. Murray takes a really wonky-looking floater where he uses glass a lot more than he should, so I'm not sure exactly what's going on with that offense there, because it doesn't always look smooth, but it is combustible. He can get it going, and if that's the case, Miami could be in for a really tough matchup. And then Millsap, again, quietly doing what he's been doing throughout his career. He's smooth, but at the same time, he's limited as far as his overall offensive repertoire. He can pull off the spin move on occasion. He'll drive to the hoop along the baseline. He'll post up from three-point range. He can do a lot of things, but you're just not sure how many of them you're getting on a nightly basis. He's still capable of playing some really solid defense, so that should be an interesting point of emphasis as far as Heat fans are concerned, what they should look out for, how good he's got it going, because he's had some really big games against Miami in the past, particularly when he was with Utah and early on in his Atlanta days too. So he's not quite the player that he was then. He's still consistent and pretty solid overall, but he's a little bit older as a player. I think the key matchup really is Jokic. I'd like to see Bam on him, but I wonder if Spoelstra is going to go with Myers-Leonard defending him a little early on to avoid foul trouble. And if he's making those passes, and Denver can get a little sloppy, it's going to be key for Miami to use their defense, the way they've been ball hawking and affecting passing lanes and things of that sort, to anticipate these passes early on and try and pull off some steals and initiate their fast break offense. Because if that's the case, then they'll have a good opportunity to steal a win there. Look, similar to the South Beach flu, you also have the Mile High situation in Denver. It is difficult for players to play there. There is an altitude issue, and so you can run out of your wind a little bit early there, in which case Miami's depth is a very, very positive thing, because you can rotate guys in and out. You can have them staying fresh throughout the course of the game. So it should be interesting to see how that plays out. I actually think Miami has a good chance of winning there. I know Denver generally plays pretty well at home. They've struggled a little bit there this season, but I think Miami could steal a win there. I think if they're able to play Jokic to a semi-standstill, where they don't let him be as fully engaged as he wants to be, if they kind of limit his offense when he does decide he wants to get it going, then maybe there's a good opportunity there. And especially if Bam doesn't play him straight up in the first quarter and then kind of shuts him down in the second and third, the way he did Karl Anthony Towns when they lost to Minnesota a couple weeks ago. So that should be a really interesting matchup. But the Heat take on the Nuggets at 9 p.m. Eastern. Check back here for my recap afterwards. But that's it for today. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email me at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. I'm David Ramil signing off. Thank you, as always, for your support.
Yeah! Wrap it up, B.